Mechcast, Thursday, September 24th, 2015. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your Mechcast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the podcast. Well, we are today going to talk about the new Apple TV, and I am not going to be doing today's show alone because after a long hiatus, we should get this guy on more often, but after a long hiatus, we have our friend Ara Derderian from the HDTV podcast back. Those of you who have been listening to the show for a while know Ara. We do segments with him about home theater and the Macintosh. We've talked very often about the Apple TV over its lifespan. You can go back and listen to those episodes. You'll find them on maccast.com. Just look for the Mac home theater section or category, and you'll find all of those episodes. And we update these every once in a while. We've also talked a lot about using Mac Mini as a home theater. And Ara also does like home automation kinds of things. So we've talked a little bit about home automation, although we haven't gotten too much into HomeKit with Ara. We're going to talk a little bit with him about that toward the end of this episode. So stay tuned and listen for that. But it should be a really great show. We're all kind of waiting on the new iPhone to get here. As I record this, we're one day away. Mine has shipped. It's on its way. iPhone 6S. White, my first white one, by the way, and gold with a blue leather case. So be watching the website, be watching the Twitter. I will probably do an unboxing video. I usually do that, throw up some photographs. It should be a big day tomorrow. But as we're sitting prepping for that, I figured it'd be a great time to talk about the new Apple TV. You have asked me questions about it, wanted some opinions, and so we're going to get into that in this episode. Before we start, though, I do have a little bit of housekeeping to get through. I need to issue a big apology to my UK listeners from the last show. I totally messed up the conversion rates, not even the conversion rates. It was the cost of the Apple Music subscription in the UK. I made it sound like it was a good deal over there. And I came to that wrong conclusion by saying, oh, it's £9.99 and it's £9.99 in the US, US dollars. Obviously, if I had been thinking for even a second about how conversion rates work, I would have realized that's not a direct comparison. But I made it anyway, and I totally screwed that up. And you called me out on Twitter and an email, as you should. And I am willing to admit where I've made wrongs. So completely wrong on that. In the UK, you're paying over US $15 a month for a subscription, and that is quite a bit more than we pay here in the States. So I just wanted to issue that apology before we dove into anything. The other thing we have to do before we get into anything is thank a couple of our show sponsors. Squarespace, you know, almost anything you need to do these days, if you're running a business, if you are doing a personal blog, if you have a sports team that you're managing, or you have a club, something like that, you need to build a website. And you're not a programmer, so what are you going to do? Well, you could learn to code. You're smart, but really, who has the time for that? You could hire someone, but that can end up being costly, and you may or may not always get what you want. And so why not do it yourself? And here is where Squarespace comes in, because they make building beautiful, responsive websites super easy, and they handle everything for you. Heck, I'm a web developer, as you know, and I've used Squarespace for several of my projects because it just makes sense. You can go in one place, you can get your domain, you can get your hosting, and you get beautiful templates and themes that you can build your website out with quickly. I mean, literally within minutes. And their sites look great, and they have all the features you need. They're affordable. You can get up and running quickly. No coding required. But again, as a web developer, something I like about Squarespace is if you want to go deeper, if you want to dig in, if you want to mess with the code, it's all there. You have all the tools you need to do that. So you can go as simple or as complex as you need. Maybe you just need a single page site. They have this new feature called cover pages that's great for that. One page websites that look beautiful. You need more than that. Do you need e-commerce or galleries for maybe your portfolio, you're doing a blog, you want to integrate maps and social media, directions, it's all in there. They have widgets, and their pricing starts at just $8 a month, and you get a free domain if you sign up for a year of service. And best of all, you don't have to take my word for it. You can try it completely free today. No credit card required. Just go to squarespace.com/maccast and try it out. And when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, you can use the offer code MACCAST and you're going to get 10% off your first purchase. So big thank you to Squarespace for their support of the MACCAST. Squarespace, build it beautiful. I'd also like to thank Tunnel Bear, another sponsor. Tunnel Bear is a really simple to use VPN that allows you to browse the web privately and get around blocked websites. And what I love about Tunnel Bear is how easy it is to use. They have over 5 million users. It lets you browse the internet privately. You can get around censorship and blocked sites. It encrypts all of your traffic so it can't be seen by the government, by ISPs, by corporations, by the guy sitting in the corner sniffing traffic in the, you know, internet cafe that you're in. Locks that down, especially when you're on those private sites. And I'm kind of only half kidding about that guy in the corner, right? We've all been there. If you're on public Wi-Fi, it's going to be better to be safe than sorry. And because Tunnel Bear makes it so easy, it doesn't even matter what platform you're on, whether you're on mobile or desktop, browser, they have solutions for all of it, iOS, Mac, Chrome, you name it. And it's literally, you install the software and you turn it on or off with a single click. The installation is a snap and you can be online and protected in seconds. So why not do it? And you can tunnel to 14 different countries. That allows you to browse the internet as if you're in a different location or a different country, get around blocking and censorship and all that sort of thing. And one of my biggest concerns with a VPN or picking a VPN is because your traffic goes through them, you have to trust the provider. And one thing that really sold me on Tunnel Bear was their plain English privacy policy. Go to their site, read it. It is one of the most transparent privacy policies I've seen for any service, and they stress that they only collect the bare minimum amount of information that they need so that they can actually provide you service. They do need a few things, but they don't go beyond that, and they make it clear in plain English so you can read for yourself. Pricing is amazing. You can use it completely free, up to 500 megabytes a month, and that's not just a trial. You get free service. If you need more than that, they have unlimited for $4.99 a month or $49.99 a year on up to 3 computers or devices. So I want you to try it now. Go to tunnelbear.com/maccast. And a big thank you to Tunnel Bear for their support of the MacCast. So let's get into that new Apple TV. I am excited to get my hands on it. We've got a little bit longer wait. It's coming out sometime in October. Hopefully it'll be here soon, but I wanted to sit down with my friend Ara and get his thoughts on it, go over a few things, and here's my conversation with him. All right, so we're talking Apple TV on the show today, and I've got my friend Ara Derderian, who has not been on in a long time. Sorry about that, Ara, from the HDTV podcast. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's been a long time. You have been requested by the listeners.
Oh, awesome.
For a while, yeah. And I've been meaning to get you back on. I was kind of waiting. And we've been waiting a long time for this to happen, right?
Well, I don't know how many times we've heard rumors of a new Apple TV, and I would get excited about it, and then nothing.
And then nothing.
This time we got it. So we got a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, Ara is my home theater, Apple TV, home automation sort of expert, and I like to get you on because you live and breathe kind of this stuff and also all the other just HDTV stuff.
Yeah.
And we've talked about, using Mac Minis and all that stuff. But this time around, we're going to get into the new Apple TV. And I think the place I really want to start is catching up with you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, I know in the past we've talked about your setup and sort of how you sort of had everything running off of Mac Minis in terms of like your home theater setup. Are you still in that place, or are you using different technology now? Because it has been a few years.
Well, so I still have a Mac Mini that's the server where all my files are, and it has my iTunes and everything, which is what I'll use for the audio. I have AirPort Extremes and stuff like that, so I use iTunes with the sending the audio to the various rooms for home audio, and as well as serving up the videos that I've ripped myself.
Right.
Although it's interesting, the more and more I start getting these certificates, you buy a Blu-ray and it has the code to get the digital download.
Yeah, the digital copy.
Yeah, I'm finding less and less desire to actually go and rip it because I have the Blu-ray for the highest quality that when I want to watch it that way, I do that. But if it's something that's quick, it's a Friday night, we're just sitting around the TV, what do we want to watch? We pull it up. It's really easy.
Right. Right. And so are a lot of the, I'm not familiar because I don't buy the little plastic discs anymore. I don't even own a Blu-ray player. Mm-hmm. So the digital downloads, I know there was kind of a format war going on for a long time. And sometimes you'd get iTunes copies and sometimes you'd get the, what was the other one called?
Why am I blocking out? It's from Ultraviolet.
Ultraviolet.
Sorry.
Yeah. So is it still the Ultraviolet thing or?
Yes. So you get the Ultraviolet, you get the, and iTunes are the big ones. Disney kind of has its own thing, but you can link it to iTunes.
Yeah. With the Disney Anywhere stuff.
Right. Right. So then it just kind of comes in through iTunes, but, and Amazon has their own thing as well. But, that's one of the only drawback of, you know, going back to what I just said about the digital copy, there right. are some titles that don't have an iTunes ability to get it.
What do you do with that? Because so you mentioned you have the Mac Mini server, but I seem to remember your, like, device that you played stuff through the TV. How do you get it to the TV, I guess is the question.
Okay, so when I don't get the digital copy, I rip it to a hard drive. So the way it works, the way I have it in my home, is I will take the digital copy, I'll add it to iTunes on that Mac Mini.
Okay.
And then on the Apple TV, you have that computers tab.
Right, the home sharing.
So I go to there, exactly. And then I'll select the Mac Mini, and then I select movies, and they're all there with the album art and the metadata
and all that.
The
stuff.
Problem is it's a little cumbersome. If you've got something that's in the Z, it starts with a Z,
right.
And you've got a couple hundred, you got to scroll all the way to the bottom if you're using the 10-foot interface.
The current Apple
right.
TV interface, now, which is old and outdated. And
right. Yeah. If you use the Apple remote app, you can directly select the movie and hit play, and it'll play.
Search. Okay, so you're still basically doing the same sort of setup
yes.
that I have. In my case, you know, it happens to be all my movies are stored on an external hard drive in iTunes that's attached to my MacBook Pro. And I'm actually getting it from my family right now because when I'm out of the house,
they can't watch their movies.
Yeah. So I get in trouble. So I have an old iMac that's sort of been waiting, sitting in the wings, waiting to become the server. And I think it's going to become even more valuable with this new Apple TV.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have bought a Mac Mini on eBay, a lower cost one. And so you might look into that as well. In fact,
I replaced my wife's iMac, 2009 iMac with a Mac Mini. And I just figure it's perfect to be repurposed.
Yeah, it is. Exactly. So, in fact, just a quick side. I live up in Orange County, and I'm a Dodger fan because I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, and I have DirecTV, so we can't watch the Dodgers here because we don't have Time Warner.
Right.
What I was going to do is buy a Mac Mini on eBay and then take it up to my in-laws' house who live up in Fresno, and do a VPN to it and
sure.
get an IP address from Fresno so then I could watch it on the MLB app. Because the problem is I had a VPN service, but these guys are a lot smarter now. They know the IPs from a VPN service. And they said, well, it looks like you're using a VPN service, so we're still going to block you.
Ugh.
Yeah, so actually have to set up your own VPN now.
So even if you buy something like the MLB, what do they call their season pass thing or whatever, you still are subject to blackout?
Right, because they don't want you to watch it through them when you can watch it through the television. They don't want to steal eyeballs from the TV.
Was it the TV or is it the stadium, right? I thought the blackouts were mainly
nowadays
to drive people
it's not
to
the stadium so much anymore because the teams own the television rights as well, and they probably make more money off the TV rights than they do the stadium. That's probably not really true, but they make a lot of money off the TV rights, so.
Huh, that's interesting. I'm not a big enough sports fan to know. So I always thought if you paid for the big season package that you directly from MLB, you just got access to every game.
You don't. Even on the football package, you don't get it for your local games.
So what are you paying several hundred dollars for?
For the ability to watch out-of-market games. So for me, I'm a Chicago Bears fan because I was born in Chicago, and we don't have a team in L.A. My dad was a big Bears fan, so I became a Bears fan. And so I buy it so I could watch the Bears. Otherwise, I completely agree. If you've got a home team and that's really all you care about, no need to buy the package.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, so we've totally gone off on a tangent.
No, that's interesting. I mean, we'll get into that more, I think, when we start talking about apps and what that means to the Apple TV. Mm-hmm. So this next section, I just wanted to dive in. I think a lot of people know what's going on, but I'm curious to get your take just on the specs. Let me run them down real quick, and then I'll just get your thoughts on them. So iFixit did do a teardown recently. If people want to check that out, I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. I think the most interesting thing about the teardown was they found out it was pretty easy to crack open and like get in at components and stuff like that. There was no glue or adhesives or anything kind of holding the thing shut. It was just like some plastic clips and you were in. But they kind of verified a lot of the stuff that we already knew, that, you know, it's got the 64-bit A8 processor and 2 gigs of RAM. I know one question I had for you on the specs, HDMI. I'm not up and familiar with all of the specs. So it's got HDMI 1.4.
Right.
Does any of that stuff matter? Do we need to worry about that? Is that the latest and greatest, or are they on to something newer?
It's not the latest and greatest, but it only matters if you're going to watch 4K with content protection. You need HDMI 2.0 and HDCP 2.2.
Well, and since there's no 4K on the Apple TV, I guess that doesn't matter.
That's exactly right. And on our show, a couple people have sent us some emails saying, I can't believe Apple has... didn't support 4K. And right. And so I think their strategy on that is, okay, right now you can get some 4K from Netflix, you can get some 4K from Amazon, but it's still actually pretty limited. And they're thinking, you know what, it may not be really prevalent for another year or so. And at that point, another opportunity for you to buy another box. I know a lot of people think, they think, I'm not going to spend any money, but at $149, right, it's not that big of a deal. And then even then, you would only buy the box if 4K mattered to you. Because I can tell you there's a lot of people, not myself and the listeners to my show, but there's a lot of people who couldn't tell the difference between 4K and even 720p. So they're thinking, oh, it looks fantastic. Why do I need to do it? Those of us who can tell the difference or want the highest quality, they may spend the money. And those people might actually even not buy this product and go more for the Amazon Fire TV, which is coming out in 4K. And we're going to have a review on that sometime in October.
Okay, so we're kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but I think...
Sorry.
I think this is good. Because there's a couple questions I have about 4K, and specifically wanted to ask you. So one thing I don't understand is, are there a couple of competing 4K standards, or is there only one 4K standard? Because I thought I read kind of some different terminology surrounding different kinds of like 4K compatible sets and things like that.
No, there's only one. 4K is the resolution, so just what the resolution of the screen is.
Okay, I thought I had heard some sort of standard referred to in terms of distribute. Maybe it has to do with the distribution.
Now, there is a standard on the Blu-ray side, like there's an Ultra 4K, and
that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. So are there different ones?
Nope. Fortunately, okay, there we don't have a format war either. So that's good news.
Okay. And then the other side of it, I guess, is 4K going to still have the same problem that we've always had with HD too, where not all 4K streams are created equal because of data compression?
Yes, that will be true. Now, they are using H.265
right,
instead of 264, and it's got a much better streaming compression algorithm, and it's going to be good. So here's the kind of thing that I think is interesting. The 1080p that is streamed today is so much better than the TV we used to watch 10 years ago, and people still complain, well, it's not as good as it can be. Yes, right, that's 100% true. It's not as good as it could be, but it's still much better than what we used to watch, that I think a lot of people don't care. It's just the audio and video files that are the ones complaining. And if you really want the highest quality, you're probably going to buy a Blu-ray disc. So, yeah, I'm not so worried about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think though, to kind of put it back on Apple on the 4K thing, they did make this announcement at the same time that they said, oh, we have a iPhone that'll let you shoot 4K video, yet they're going to put out an Apple TV where you can't take that content and play it back. And also on the movie side of things, I mean, they are kind of in control of those movies as well. So yeah, we say you've got Netflix and some YouTube stuff, and there's maybe not enough 4K content available. But the minute Apple wanted to flip a switch and have all 4K movies in iTunes, they can kind of control that distribution.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I kind of the devious side of me thinks this is a planned obsolescence move.
Well, yeah. And I tend to agree with that. I actually agree more with your other statement, which was, you know, it really isn't. It's one of those technologies that isn't ready for primetime. And we saw Apple do this with 1080p as well. I mean, they were kind of late to that game also, yeah, with the Apple TV.
Yeah, I agree with that. But 4K is ready for primetime. There's a lot of 4K televisions out there. Netflix is streaming. It's limited content in 4K. So if there was content for 4K, there will be consumers ready to take that. And this year, television-wise, everything we're reading says it's going to be huge for 4K, and you're going to get some great deals. So the fact that they're coming out with this in October and they're planning on a huge 4K television sale at Christmas time, I'm a little bit surprised, but you know, who knows what they're thinking.
Get ready to spend another $150, $200 next year, probably.
Exactly. Now, the good news for me is right now I only have one 4K TV, so I'm only going to have to swap out one of those.
Right.
Right. So maybe that's what they're thinking. And the other thing they could be doing is they can introduce it 6 months from now and keep this one as well and lower the price on this. There's a lot of things they can do to kind of fill out their product line.
Sure. And they know the early adopters are going to pay for whatever they put out.
So. Yeah, exactly.
So other quick specs, they moved from micro USB or mini micro USB, I think is what it was, for the service port to USB-C. That wasn't hugely shocking. Two things that I want to ask you about on the tech spec side, 100 base T on the Ethernet, 802.11 AC Wi-Fi. What's your thoughts? I've always felt that being hardwired is better. I guess 100 base T is good enough for most 1080p HD going over your network.
Yeah, I was surprised that they didn't go gigabit, but I don't know what the cost is. It's been around for a long time. What can the cost differential be?
Right.
But
does it matter, I guess, is my question.
For the
to you.
Stuff that you're going to watch, even Blu-ray at full spec, which there's no movies that come out of full spec, is 56 megabits per second. So that can fit through that pipe. Because you're only going to be streaming one main thing, and maybe there might be some background apps pulling some data down in the background. So that's more than enough for this device.
What about the family that has two Apple TVs? And
well, there's different. It doesn't matter, though, because that's 100 base T per device.
Per device, right?
So
right?
If your network is gigabit, it can support it.
Yeah, there you go. 802.11 AC Wi-Fi, is it enough to go over Wi-Fi, or are you going to have problems?
Oh, Wi-Fi will be fine. The 802.11 AC Wi-Fi, you'll be able to stream anything with that. Yeah.
So do you, when you get yours, do you think you will do Wi-Fi? I mean, I've upgraded to 802.11 AC Wi-Fi. And is that because of reliability more than anything else?
Nothing beats hardwired connection.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. So I've always tried to hardwire my Apple TV, although where it is now, I'm trying to think. Did I run a wire? I could run a wire. I don't know if I did.
So, you know, another thing to consider, I don't know how many of your listeners do this, but my mother-in-law has an Apple TV on one of the TVs in their family room, and it's connected via Wi-Fi. And I will use that desktop extension all the time on my laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's Wi-Fi and the Apple TV's Wi-Fi, now you got a lot of traffic going over Wi-Fi, so it doesn't work as well. But when one of them is hardwired, it works a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same way. And then the big thing in the spec side that a lot of people are talking about is Apple removed the digital optical out.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me whatsoever because I'm all HDMI and that supports all the audio and everything over one cable. Anyone who's doing that now, they must have older equipment and they just kind of trying to hang on to it. Mm-hmm. And that's got to be a much smaller population. And they just made the decision, kind of like probably the decision with 100 base T. They're going to advertise this and try to sell it. So saving, you know, a buck here and a buck there over a million or 10 million, however many they're going to sell, it all adds up.
So HDMI really in the home theater market has sort of obsoleted the digital optical.
I can probably look around and find some cables, but I haven't had anything optical in this house in probably.
I've never used the port, so you know it doesn't bother me. I think one of the bigger deals is on the spec side on the audio. It looks like this is going to be the first Apple TV to support digital Dolby Digital Plus 7.1.
Yeah, and that sounds phenomenal. So you've probably heard of like Dolby True HD, and that is a lossless compression algorithm. But they also have Dolby Digital Plus, which is a compressed audio stream. But people have a very hard time hearing the difference. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken with some people at Dolby, and they'll never say it's as good because, you know, right. Why would you? But some of them say, yeah, it's. They say, what was the thing? It's amazing how good our Dolby Digital Plus sounds. That was like their canned answer.
It'll be interesting to see if the content's available, because that's always been another thing with the specs. You know, for the longest time, Apple had 5.1, but a lot of their stuff was still put out in, just Dolby Digital, the stereo.
Yeah, now, what was I going to say? The Amazon has a lot of stuff in Dolby Digital Plus. Mm-hmm. I've not seen, and Netflix has, a few titles in Dolby Digital Plus. I have not seen anything come from Apple directly in Dolby Digital Plus. So it'd be great if they can do that, because I know a lot of the content already has a Dolby Digital Plus audio track.
Right. Yeah. So hopefully, since they'll finally have a device that can play it, they'll start supporting it as well. And then the other thing on the audio side, this isn't really spec related, but I'm super excited about this, is they have a technology, well, they're calling it enhanced speech, mm-hmm. right? But it's this mode, and you can even activate it through the Siri remote and say, you know, turn on enhanced speech, where it'll kind of lower the sound effects and music stuff, but bring up the speech track. You know, a lot of TVs and things like that have this in there, but it's great. You know, for someone like me, the family goes to bed at night, I still want to stay up and watch movies. I get yelled at if I turn it up too loud, and then I have a hard time hearing. So,
yeah, that's the perfect scenario for that, and that's the market that they're trying to reach. I have gone to bed in this house, and my kids were watching something, and under normal circumstances, it's great. And then something happens where the music comes up, and all of a sudden, I'm like, what's going on?
Explosions.
So that's, well, I have daughters. They don't watch explosions, but they do watch things that have music. And so, yeah, that will be fantastic. You know, a lot of receivers, like you said, have that technology. So if your receiver has it, you don't need this functionality, but it's if your receiver doesn't have it, it's nice to have it in the source.
Real quick, we talked a little bit about pricing already. Two storage sizes, 32 gigabyte for $149 US and 64 for $199 US. You think that's enough storage?
You know, if you're using it just as a movie and audio and that kind of stuff, yes, it's plenty. But there's a gaming aspect to this that we'll probably talk about in a little bit. That's where I'm curious if it's going to be enough there.
Yeah, I know how that's being handled, so we'll touch on that a little bit. Some other features, the Siri remote. So it does have Siri built in. What do you think about the Siri remote?
Excited about that, because one of the interfaces that I would love to see on a television is coming here, that you can ask Siri stuff like, who's in this? And it pops up on the lower third, the actors, and then you can decide whether you want to interact with it and go full screen. And if you do, it pauses the movie. Or you can say, did the Dodgers win today? And it'll pop up the score. Or what's the weather going to be like? It's everything I've wanted my smart television to do. Uh-huh. It does it here on the Apple TV.
Yeah, I'm kind of really excited about that feature as well. The one thing I read, and I'm hoping this isn't true, is that some of the like specifically actor content and stuff like that might be limited only to iTunes stuff. So it's not clear if it's going to work with like the HBO or Showtime or some of the other content.
Oh, like who's in this movie? Yeah. I get that. Okay.
Hopefully it's something that is, you know, developer enabled or tied into. I don't know where they're getting the data from. I don't know if they're getting the data directly from iTunes and that's why it is, or if they're going out to IMDb or what have you. So I'm curious to play with that feature and see. I'd also be curious to know if you're playing stuff through the home sharing, because you've ripped it and put the metadata into your iTunes library, will it pull from there, or is it really limited just to content from Apple's own servers?
My guess is it's going to be the Apple servers.
Yeah, that's what I would guess as well.
You have a good point where Netflix may implement their application so that they support that functionality.
Right.
And that's what I'm hoping, because they are, when you do that search, one of the things you can do with Siri is search other movies that are similar to this or whatever. It will include stuff from HBO, Netflix, or whatever.
The search is going to be key.
So I'm hoping that that there's a little bit more integration with the applications.
I'm really hopeful that's another feature that is easy for developers of apps to implement and include. It's not clear at this point if, you know, Apple only partnered with certain content providers to, you know, include that functionality, or if it's going to be something that's more open.
I would have to think it's open. It makes more sense because it gives Apple a leg up on the competition to have this type of functionality across all the applications if the developer chooses to implement it.
Right.
What I also am excited about this. Now, I know companies like Netflix and Hulu, they had special access to there was probably already a developer's kit, however rudimentary it probably was. But my guess is this is a more full-featured developer's kit. And so it will allow Netflix and Hulu and HBO to be a little bit more creative and allow them to do what they wanted with the interface. Because if you thought about it, the HBO interface, the Hulu, they were very similar because they probably had a very strict requirements on how to do that. But now, from what I've seen, HBO can do whatever they want in their application. So if they want to build a slicker interface, they can.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. With the current Apple TV, the interfaces are kind of seem like they're sandboxed a little bit, whereas the new UI looks like it's much more open. Another feature related to what we were talking about with the sound that I'm excited about is you can now connect Bluetooth headphones and speakers directly to the Apple TV.
So, that's cool, but I don't care that much.
Well,
about
for
that.
Me, again, it's like I have relegated myself to watching a lot of movies that I want to watch in the evenings on my iPad on the small screen, because again, my family wants to go to bed and they don't want the sound on, or it has to be turned so far down that I have trouble hearing. So now I can throw on, you know, a pair of wireless Bluetooth headphones and go to town. So I'm kind of excited about that.
Oh, that's very, very good point.
Back on the big screen.
You know, going back to the Siri thing, they have this one feature, like, what did he say? And this is made for my wife, because I don't know how many times she will say, what did they just say? And stop and go back and rewind it. But now I won't have to do that. I can just ask Siri. It'll go back and then turn on captions so she can read it. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, especially for really soft audio. I mean, some movies that I don't know how they mix the sound. But I mean, even in a good listening environment, you know, sometimes they get the audio so soft. And if the enunciation isn't there, it can be hard.
Yeah.
You're like, what just happened? I don't really know what just happened. Another little feature that I noticed in the screenshots, I didn't hear them talk about this, but again, for people who have kids, this is a big deal. I use this all the time. It looks like they have Common Sense Media reviews in there now. And for anybody who doesn't know that, Common Sense Media gives you age ratings and parental sort of guidance things and things like that. So it'll tell you a little bit about what the content is, what the makeup of the content is. You know, is it violent? Is it sexual or adult? Is it, you know, and at what range? And even give a little bit of description for each thing. So you can kind of make an educated guess on a piece of content if it's going to be appropriate or not.
Yeah, that's good for, like, I guess even in your case, if you got like the younger children, mine are a little bit older and they're probably looking at it for like, okay, dad, don't watch this with me.
Exactly. But I'm wondering too, if that data is built into, because I think Siri uses review data as well as,
you know, what, I
that
think
kind
it's
of data to figure out, you know, what to recommend. So if you say, you know, Siri, give me some kid movies appropriate for an 11-year-old. I think that's how she's able to do something like that.
Yeah, and it's a service, right, that they subscribe to, and then they'll pass along the title of the movie, and you know, it's all done behind the scenes and makes it really easy now.
Yeah, because I think too, it's like you can, and I think they use the Rotten Tomatoes data in the same way, because I saw in some of the examples you could ask for, you know, show me the latest action movies, and then you can say, oh no, only the good ones.
That's awesome.
And good is such a relative term, but I'm assuming they're going to use Rotten Tomato ratings of at a certain threshold, right? Yeah. To kind of figure out what's good and what's not good. So, and then it's even that at that point, it's really subjective. So who knows? You might like movies that Siri doesn't
yeah, or like you said, there's some Rotten Tomato movies. I was like, really, this got that high or that low?
Yeah.
So yeah, you'll probably want to have your own filter.
So what do you think of the new UI in general?
It looks okay, but you know what? I didn't get so hung up on it because I really plan on using Siri to do everything. What I'm hoping I can do is say, Siri, launch Hulu and play the latest episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And then I don't even have to go through the user interface. So that's what I'm hoping that will happen. I've not seen... I know you can launch Hulu, but I don't know if you can get that specific, say, launch and play a movie. Because one of the things I did not like I have the HBO, and we were watching, what was it, Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find a way to bookmark that show. So every time I had to go into series, scroll down to Silicon Valley, and then select the next episode.
Right.
There may be a way, I just couldn't find it. So if somebody knows, let me know. But it won't matter actually after October, because I'm hoping I can just say, Siri, play the latest episode of Silicon Valley. And I don't even have to say launch HBO. It right. just goes and does it.
Yeah, hopefully. And we're going to get you back on. We both agreed already that we're going to come back on maybe a couple weeks after we've had it, or maybe a month or so, and give our feedback. I think maybe a couple of weeks will be good enough time to figure
I'll
it out.
Have a couple of hours.
we don't want the immediate formed opinions.
Yeah, I know.
Because those tend to, I don't know how you are, for me they tend to be a little bit tainted.
Yeah, no, totally, because you have to live with something long enough to understand what the quirks are and what bothers you.
Yeah. So it's and most of the time when I get a new Apple product, it's I already know about all the new shiny things that I'm going to love. It's all the things that I immediately find out that I don't like.
Yes,
exactly. In the first few hours, it's, hey, this isn't working the way they demoed. This stinks. So another thing on the UI, what do you think about the little parallax icons? This is kind of just one of, Apple always throws in that one sort of, I think, eye candy, just fun feature. It's not really...
And you just nailed it. Eye candy and fun. Because in the demo that I was watching... I forget what her name was, but she was just kind of like moving. It's like, it was kind of like you're just like flicking it or whatever. It was just like, okay, what's the point? But it's, I guess, like you said, eye candy.
It tilts around. The one point I think of it on from a UI perspective is the new UI. If you remember the old one, it kind of has a highlight that goes around each icon. The new UI doesn't have that highlight. So as you sort of slide between the icon itself, you know, the whole sort of panel, it's almost like it's on a teeter-totter, right? Like a multi-directional teeter-totter. It will tilt toward the direction that you're going, and the other one will kind of pick up. So you kind of get this sort of, you know, wobbling effect as you move from one to the other. So I think it's kind of so you have a sense of what direction you're going in and
that
what's
part
highlighted.
That part of the thing is functional. I was referring to where
the layers. Kinda,
you stayed on it and you were kind of just like moving it around. I didn't understand why. I guess that was
well, and it's cool. They have in the developer kit, developers, they can do up to 5 separate layers. So you get kind of that 3D effect where, you know, the thing in that's more in the foreground doesn't move quite as much as the background. So just like on your iPhone with the parallax effect, you get kind of that little depth feeling to it too. So it's a neat little trick, but and it's going to be fun to play with her for about the first, you know, 5 minutes, and then you're going to forget about it. They always have that kind of feature. So I think we already talked mostly about the Siri stuff, the skip forward, what, you know, skip forward mm-hmm. 10 minutes, what did you say, sports and weather, TV show information. The one thing a lot of people don't realize, I know I mentioned this on the show, but it bears repeating here, is apparently it's going to be limited. Siri, at least at launch, is going to be limited to just 8 countries for the Siri search stuff in the Apple TV.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. So I think it's like Germany, Australia, US, UK. I'm not going to remember all of the countries, but, you know, they are releasing the Apple TV in like 100 countries or something simultaneously. I forget how many. It was like a big launch. I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of disappointed people out there when they find out they don't have they don't have the Siri functionality. And it's not even clear if those TVs in those countries will get the Siri remote or not. It sounds like they do get the Siri remote. It's just that when you press the Siri button, it brings up an on-screen search box, like a universal search box, instead of activating Siri. And I don't know if they'll be able to enable it later. It's really not clear at this point.
Hopefully they will, because I'll tell you, the Siri thing is what really sells it for me, because being able to just ask Siri to do that stuff is fantastic. If I was want to see who won, you know, the Dodgers, you know, if they won today, I don't want to have to type that in. You know, first world problems, I guess. But I have an iPad right next to me. I could go just do that on the iPad. So I don't need to. But having the remote and saying, hey, you know, what's the weather going to be like tomorrow? That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I'm really hoping that's the case. But some of the documentation made it sound like the remote that came with those units didn't even have the microphones built into it. So I don't know if that's like a next generation thing, they'll get it, or
when
they get their 4K. I'm hoping that's not the case. I'm hoping it's just a software disabled thing, and it can be enabled as they roll out, because I'm sure they want to get it in as many countries as possible. But Siri has always had this, you know, issue of, you know, not being in every country right at launch, even on the phone. So I'm not even sure, you know, how many countries Apple's rolled out Siri on the iPhone in. I'm pretty sure it's still not available in every country where they sell iPhones. So. I can't imagine living without her, but
I know I have gotten more. In fact, just on my way home, I was talking to my cousin and he had a computer problem. So I said, okay, I'm going to go to my mom's on Sunday. I'll stop by. And I said, oh, I'll probably forget. So I said, I told Siri, remind me to go to my cousin's house on Sunday, and I gave it a time and it'll pop up. I go, oh yeah, I need to do that. You know, it's great, because right then and there you can ask it to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love how contextual it is, even more contextual it is on the TV, or it at least appears to be, right? We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out in a few weeks
how well it works. Cinematic screensavers, do we even need to mention those? Does anybody care about those? I can't believe they spent even any time on that.
You know, they seem kind of cool, but my screensaver is like pictures from my iCloud photo stuff. I'm not changing that. I like having family pictures come up, so yeah, I don't care.
Whoops. Sorry about that. I was trying to silence my watch, and I ended up pinging the iPhone. And the screensavers don't even stay up that long, because most TVs actually have a screensaver in it of itself. It kicks on, I guess, unless you turn that off. I never turned mine off. And it seemed like an odd thing, because they're beautiful, and I think, I would kind of want to use them, maybe. But, you know, Apple's been so about the environment lately. And I know LCDs are lower power and they don't use all that stuff, but it's still, you know, are we really all going to leave our TVs on, you know, to watch a cinematic screensaver?
So, no, and the way I use my photo thing as well is when I'm playing music or we have people, we're entertaining or something, then it's on. Because as there's music and having picture scroll is kind of cool. But in general, it's not on the screen, because exactly, I'm not going to turn my TV on just to watch a screensaver.
So I just thought it was interesting that Apple spent so much time on that. But and then I guess the last thing to talk about, we talked about apps a little bit. One thing I wanted to get your take on. So Apple, you know, it's interesting, because we've been hearing about, you know, Apple's been trying to work on this streaming TV service. And, you know, there was some debate going into the announcement. Is Apple going to announce it? Are they not? Sounds like they're having really hard times with the studios and sort of getting content deals done. Apple says apps are the future of television. Do we agree with that? I mean, TVs have had apps for...
I do agree with that. I think somewhere down the road, the concept of ABC coming over the air is going to be gone.
Right.
You will have an ABC app, and it'll run on everything, computers or laptops, Fire TV, whatever. And you'll just tell Siri to tune to the ABC app. You'll pull in the stream and you'll just watch it as if it's coming from cable or whatever. So the cool thing about this is now Apple allows the networks themselves to control their own kind of distribution of it, in one sense. Because right now in Los Angeles, there's I have a KABC. That's our Channel 7. It's our ABC affiliate. Mm-hmm. They have an app that runs on the iPhone. And whenever the news is on, you can stream the news.
Right.
It won't take them much to convert that application to run on the Apple TV. Now, all of a sudden, I can watch live news on my Apple TV. And I believe CBS is going to put their app that streams your local content on the Apple TV too. So whether Apple goes and signs these things up, it may be moot, because I think these networks will just create their own apps.
Yeah. I kind of feel like it was maybe a concession. I think they really wanted to do a package that they could sell.
Yes, I agree.
I think it didn't happen. I think they went, you know, this is too much of a pain in the rear. We already have these guys making content for iPhones and iPads. You know, let's just go this route and we'll get it on the Apple TV and be done with it. And I think they're going to continue to work on a streaming sort of package deal sort of thing. But in the meantime,
and nothing stops them from doing that. So you could have all the stuff that's kind of disjointed, or they go and package it and they come up with a television like interface where you click Apple cable or whatever it is, you know, the Apple TV. Right. And that's kind of redundant, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then within that, there'll be virtual channel numbers. And you'll switch to channel 7 to watch ABC. Channel 9 will be whatever, and so I think that there's some value there, and I would love that, because then I would pretty much watch everything on the Apple TV, provided that the quality was good, just because of the Siri integration.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't even, at that point with Siri in there, you don't even need channels anymore, right? It's just like you were saying earlier. You're just going to ask for the show that you want to watch.
Exactly, and you'll say, tune to the ABC stream, and it'll just, boom, there you go. You're watching the ABC stream.
Or ABC News or whatever it might be, yeah, or CNN. And I think another thing on the app side of things is it was the way for them to get sports, and I think that's really key for a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people only have a cable package because they want sports.
Yeah, and that would be really cool if my it'd be so great if the Dodgers would give us an app so I could watch the Dodgers again.
Right.
But that's a very good point. And that will give everything. And I think what's interesting is, because it will be disjointed, they needed something to kind of pull it together where you don't have to go scrolling through 100 apps. You just tell Siri to go launch it, and there it is. And that's the killer feature right there is Siri.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, with baseball, if you did have, you know, a Dodgers app and you had MLB app and you had some other app that did sports videos, say, just for whatever reason, you know, did baseball game highlights or something like that, you could literally say, you know, show me the Dodgers game. And she might pop up and say, well, I've got these three options. Which one?
Yes, exactly. Right? And then, yeah, that's actually pretty cool. And then you can decide, well, you know what? The MLB app actually has a higher quality than this. So, yeah, watch it on here.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be the same for movies for sure, because HBO might have the same thing that Netflix has, that might have the same thing as Hulu. You know, you never know. So the one thing on apps I did want to comment, I just thought it was kind of funny, because we've had apps on TVs for like forever, ever since they started doing quote unquote smart TVs, right? All those things have apps, right? And games. And
yes,
I don't have a smart TV, so I don't really know. So, I mean, what's the difference here, though? I mean, what's Apple doing that's better than, you know, what you already could get with your Samsung Smart TV or your Google
All
Smart
right, so
TV or whatever?
What I found is, regardless whether it's the Roku, which is another set-top box, or the Amazon Fire TV set-top box, or Apple TV, I find those to have better implementations than what the TVs themselves do.
So it's quality.
Yeah, I find the TVs are a little bit cumbersome. And then the other thing is, for whatever reason, some of the implementations on the television don't have Dolby Digital. Not all of them. I know Netflix does. Like on my 4K TV, if I watch something 4K off of Netflix, I do get the Dolby Digital. But uh-huh. There's some that you don't. Or it's just a really hard to get into the interface. And I think there's more capability in a standalone set-top box that's geared to do that one thing. And I think the TV manufacturers would be better off just making
good TVs,
quote unquote, dumb TVs, right? And
focusing on really good TV features rather than messing around with apps.
You know what? And you really don't even need TV features anymore, because between your cable box or your you know, your Roku or Apple TV box, the TV just needs to be a monitor. It doesn't really need to be much more than that.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it's a very good point. So, kind of in the same realm, games. Are these a really big deal?
I'm kind of excited about that. I had an Xbox 360 that I ended up giving away to a friend of mine because it hadn't been turned on in, you know, over a year or two. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't, we just didn't play that much. But now I've got a $199 box if I get the larger amount of storage. And there's going to be some really cool games. I consider myself a casual gamer, which is, I think, perfect for this type of set-top box. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I think another big thing that Apple's going to gain traction on here is giving developers that option to do universal apps that work on the iPad, the iPhone, and the Apple TV. I think a lot of developers will take advantage of that. And that means from day one, there could be quite a few titles that you already own that just suddenly are playable on your Apple TV. And because of this new, what do they call it, app thinning thing that they can do?
Yes.
With the app thinning, when you pull down the app to whatever device, it gets rid of any extraneous assets. So if, you know, they have a universal app is going to be optimized for the different screens, it's just going to pull the assets for your Apple TV when you load it on your Apple TV. And then when you load it on your iPad, it's just going to pull the assets for the iPad. So that's one of the things on storage, that's one of the ways that they're handling that. So we were talking about, you know, how much storage do you need earlier? The other thing people need to know about it is the core apps are limited to 200 gigabytes.
Okay.
Storage.
Megabytes.
Yeah. Sorry. 200 megabytes of storage. And so then for like larger titles or games, because you might be going or thinking the same thing I thought, which was, well, you know, I have games on my iPad that are 3 gigabytes, right? How does that get handled? And so what they have to do is they have to use cloud storage and streaming to pull down the assets. So the way it's going to work is if you've got a big sort of 3D title, you might get in the initial package, the initial 200 megabytes, you get the core game, you know, the settings stuff, and then maybe the first couple levels. And then what happens is in the background, they can start pulling down up to another 2 gigabytes of data. So as you're playing through the first couple levels, it can be pulling down the next couple levels and storing those. And then as you progress further, what they have to do is they have to purge out. So I think they get a total of like 2 gigabytes ultimate of storage, but it's sort of not permanent.
So I figured they would do something like that because it was clear that there wasn't enough storage for like these big games. But there's a lot of games that aren't that big either that are really fun.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't play this, but some friends of mine do Clash of Clans or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
That's a very popular game. And and it's one of those things that it pulls down, which I think even there on your iPhone or iPad, it pulls down only what it needs. So, yeah, I think they're set up to do that kind of stuff. And if you think about something like Call of Duty or something like that, once you go past a level, you rarely go back to it.
Right.
And I think what ends up happening is if you decide to go back to it, it says, please wait while we pull down, you know, the information.
Right.
And you'll just have to wait. And I think that'll be really cool. I'm excited about it. And yeah, could you imagine playing GarageBand? There could be a whole new market of controllers just for the Apple TV.
Yeah, like Guitar Hero and Rock Band and all that stuff. Yeah.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And, I don't mind playing some games. I just hated having that huge Xbox in there. And whenever I turned it on, it made so much noise. The Apple TV is virtually silent.
Yeah, that's true. I never even thought about that. That's kind of cool. You think the Siri remote's good enough? One thing that came out is Apple is going to require any game be playable using only the Siri remote. And there was originally this thing in the specs that said developers could require like a third-party controller for maybe some more advanced games, but they reversed that requirement. So what do you think about not allowing developers to sort of force you to get a third-party controller?
So I suspect there'll be some limited functionality and if you really want to do the big stuff and, you know, like on football, doing the spin moves and whatever, you'll probably need a full blown remote. So yeah, it'll just have a limited functionality.
Yeah. I mean, that remote's okay, but it's, for certain games, I would imagine it's not going to be the best interface.
Was it you or somebody else who made a comment about, I bet that they're going to have wrist straps for those things pretty soon?
I did say that.
Yeah, you did. Okay, I thought I did see that.
My prediction is they do have a wrist strap that you can get. Yeah, they're $13. And they plug into the Lightning connector, basically. My prediction is that they're going to actually have to give them away at some point because people aren't going to buy them and they're going to throw that. Now, the remote's pretty small, so maybe it won't be that big a deal, but you have one person who nicks their LCD and they're not going to be happy.
Yep. I agree, because that thing flies out of your hand.
It's metal.
Even though it's small, it'll put a chip in your TV.
Not a great thing. So last thing on apps, what about other apps? I know they showed like shopping apps. Like, is everything really appropriate for the television? They showed Airbnb. I love Airbnb and I've used it. I can't imagine like browsing for an Airbnb place on my TV.
I think for something like that, you sit with a laptop on your lap and whatever's on TV, if you're not that interested in it.
Or like just Zillow.
Yeah, I sometimes the kids will be watching something and my wife, and I just want to be with them in the same room.
Right.
I'll sit on my laptop and do that kind of stuff. I don't see any reason why I would want to do that. But I've been wrong before. Who knows? Maybe that'll be like the next great thing.
Well, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see. I don't know. You know, men and women are different. And maybe that's something that appeals to some women or some men. I don't know. I just can't. It just seems like to me that there's certain apps that should kind of never make their way on the Apple TV. And so the one thing about them opening up apps is I'm curious how open it is. Like, can any developer submit any app just like the App Store? And then sort of the market decides what they like or what they don't like. Are we going to have a bunch of, you know,
that's how I would go, because it's not going to force you to download it. Just how many apps are on, you know, if you're interested in it, you'll
download
it.
Harder though, right? It makes discovery harder when you're looking through the store.
You know, I really don't look through
400,000 apps.
I agree with you, but I don't look through the store on the apps. I typically will, you know, get a review from you or some of the other podcasts I watch or listen to or watch, or just, you know, in my RSS feed. That's how I find a lot of these things. I seldomly just go browse the store.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what kind of apps we get.
Yeah, so I'll popular. Leave it to you, Adam, to go
to figure out what's
through
good.
All this stuff. Yes, exactly.
All right. So lastly, I want to just finish up with a couple questions. The big one being, you know, we kind of started out talking about how you're kind of doing things currently. And I fell into the same sort of pattern of using a Mac and using home sharing and using the Apple TV, mostly just as a receiver for a lot of my ripped content and stuff like that. I even messed around for a while with Plex, but, you know, playing that, the only way you'd really do it would be use the app and maybe AirPlay or something like that. So are we at a point, like, is this version of the Apple TV finally the one where we think you can replace the Mac Mini Media Center, or do we still kind of need that as like the repository, especially for like
and that's
stuff,
how I'm
right?
using it. The Mac Mini is just a storage. I'm not using it as a media center or anything.
Right, it's not now, plugged in anymore.
Right,
so maybe exactly. We were already past that.
Yeah, I was past it. But what's cool about Plex and VLC, I'm excited about that because Plex is a really cool media center. The main reason I didn't end up switching over to Plex is I kind of liked the other apps that came with the Apple TV, the HBO, and that kind of stuff. So what'll be nice about this is if I decide to, I can just launch Plex for the interface to my movies. But then again, if the Siri integration is as deep as I'm hoping it's going to be, I'm hoping I can just have it launch my movie anyway, and then I really don't need much of a front end.
A big question, I want to bring this up because a number of people have asked me if I know, will Siri be able to search through your home sharing content? Like, will she be able to find stuff that's on home sharing? And that I don't know.
Yeah, that's the first thing I'm going to check to see if I can do it, because if it does, that will be really fantastic.
If it doesn't, it's going to be really disappointing.
Yeah, link to this iTunes, and it should be able to go categorize iTunes, because if you think about it, on your iPhone, you could go tell it to play any song you want on your phone. It can go do it. So why not be able to say, also search this hard drive and categorize everything and allow me to voice select those movies?
Yeah. So just sort of related to the whole ripping things and putting stuff into iTunes, I'm kind of curious just to get a quick update on, you know, how are you going to, do you know how you're going to set things up? Have you thought about this a little bit?
I'm going to set it up exactly the way it is today. Okay. So I will have my Mac Mini. It'll still be there. Once the Apple TV gets turned on, I will go and turn on Home Share, and it will find the computers just the way it normally does. So, nice. Again, if Siri can search that drive, that will be a home run.
What are your tools now that you're using? Are they pretty much the same tools for like sort of ripping content, yeah, and putting in metadata? And
yeah, for putting in my metadata, I'm using a program called MetaZ.
Okay, you're still using that?
Yeah, and I'm ripping the Blu-rays with something called MakeMKV.
Right.
And then for compression into MPEG-4, I'm using Handbrake.
Okay, so I think if people want to hear that full workflow, I think we covered it pretty well on a previous episode. Just go on maccast.com.
And that information's on our website.
Yeah, there's a Mac Media category, as a matter of fact, you can go into, and you'll find all the shows I've done with Ara. And, of course, they can listen to your podcast as well. The last thing I wanted to ask you about, because we've talked about this as well, and this was sort of left out of the whole Apple TV thing, and that's the other side. So we have home theater. The other thing that a lot of us are getting into and a lot of people are excited about is home automation.
Yeah.
And HomeKit. And they didn't talk in about that at all.
Right. Because I'm thinking HomeKit is still a little bit half-baked.
Have you messed with it at all? Do you have HomeKit
stuff?
No,
I haven't. I have a full-blown home automation system. So I didn't bother playing around with it that much. Because one of the things that I like is I can set up scenes in my house, which would basically just think of it as big macros that say when I pause my movie, have the lights turn on and blah blah blah, right? I don't know how to do that with the HomeKit yet. I think you can tell Siri to do something, but I don't know that it's as that in depth. Now, if the Apple TV is a controller for the HomeKit and they start giving you some sort of interface to where you can start programming it, I may think about checking it out.
That's absolutely what it's supposed to be. And HomeKit does have the ability to sort of set up scenes just like you're talking about. So you can define locations and put them into scenes. You can define devices and put them into locations. You know, it's all Apple has a whole terminology for this. Again, we haven't really seen it rolled out very widely yet. And I think you're right. I think that's why they didn't really focus on HomeKit. The one thing that the current Apple TV does, and I'm sure this Apple TV does as well, is it does act as a conduit for your HomeKit devices so that they can talk outside of your local Wi-Fi network.
Yes, and that's so you'd be able to turn on your air conditioning from, you know, from your car as you're driving home or something like that. Right. That was another bummer until it had this capability. If your iPhone's with you, it's not talking to your HomeKit devices, but now it'll be a bridge.
Yeah, so it does function as a bridge. You know, I really had a lot of hopes for HomeKit. And I even, like, I put in some Insteon lights because Insteon was one of the few companies that announced early on that they were going to have HomeKit support. I have to buy a new hub, which I haven't done yet. But I mainly haven't bought that new hub yet because there's just not a lot of stuff happening with HomeKit. So I've been kind of waiting to spend the money.
I think it'll get there. It's just a matter of, I think Apple didn't realize how complex or even how full the field is with this stuff. So they have to learn. And I think as they're learning, they're not going to push it because it's not quite there yet. That's my take.
Yeah. So are you still, I think last time you talked, you were using a lot of Insteon?
Insteon and Z-Wave, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the Insteon stuff, there should be some ways to actually work and integrate with HomeKit maybe, right?
Yes. In fact, I talk to the people at Insteon, and they did say that they will be supporting it, and that's good news. When you get somebody like Insteon and Z-Wave, if they're on board, then HomeKit will work.
Yeah, very, very cool. Well, as I said at the beginning of the show, you know, this is kind of your realm of stuff, HDTV and home theater and home automation and all that sort of stuff. You want to tell people a little bit about your show and where they can find you and all that fun stuff?
Sure. We are at htguys.com. And like you said, we do home theater, high definition television, home theater, audio, now home automation. And every now and then we'll even get off a little bit out of there, depending on if we think something is cool. But it's home tech, I guess, is probably another way to look at it.
Oh, so that's cool.
HT can stand for home tech. But yeah, we started out just high definition television and then quickly realized that that's only going to go so far. And, you know, it's 10 years into this, 706 episodes. We're still amazed that we have stuff to talk about. And
yeah,
we do.
That's right. You were one of the early guys, just like I was.
Yours was one of the first podcasts I ever listened to. And I remember listening to it. My wife was not used to hearing just human voices coming from the speakers. She was used to hearing music,
right?
And she's going, "Who is that?" And I go, "Oh, that's a podcast." And she's like, "What's a podcast?" And he goes, "Oh, I thought he was in the room with us." It was just kind of weird because I was playing it. And right. Then I talked to Braden and I said, "We should do something like this." And 10 years later, we're still doing it.
Well, it's a great show and people should certainly check it out.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hopefully they got a little taste of it here. Get more at htguys.com. And Ara, thank you for coming on again and talking to us about this stuff. And for sure, after this thing comes out, which I guess is late October.
So we should probably make an appointment to get together sometime before Thanksgiving or slightly after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah,
I can't wait to get my hands on this thing.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it as well. So,
all right, cool. Well, thanks for coming on and take care.
Sure, thanks.
Always great to get Ara back on the show, especially when we're talking about Apple TV and home theater. Great podcast. Be sure you check it out. And a big thank you to him for chatting with us. With that, though, I think it's going to do it for today's episode. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors: Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, also Text Expander Touch for your iPhone and iPad, as well as PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can check out all of their great software by going to smilesoftware.com/MacCast. Gazelle is the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth by going to gazelle.com. And TunnelBear, really simple VPN to browse privately and get around blocked websites. You can try it today by going to tunnelbear.com/MacCast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts and comments on the iPhone. We should be getting those here in the next day or so. Maybe you already have yours, depending upon when you listen to this podcast. If you have any feedback for me, a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your email to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number is 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. Or you can also leave voicemail if you use Skype. My Skype username is The MacCast. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And on the social media, you want to follow me between shows, find out what's going on, especially on iPhone launch day. There'll be a lot of tweets and things going out. So you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. Or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. Or if you prefer Google+, it's google.com/plusMacCast. And that's the plus symbol. I look forward to seeing you online. But until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.